Well, it's coming up on Valentine's Day, which of course means that I'm thinking about how our innate drives for love, sex, community have been harnessed and just co-opted really to serve capitalism. Isn't that what we all think about on Valentine's Day? So, and I've been thinking about an essay I read in a very good book by Bill McKibben called The Age of Missing Information. He wrote it in the 90s. And one of the essays in that has always stuck with me. The book was about how he watched basically every program that was available on cable TV for in the 24-hour period. He taped them all and then went through and watched every single program over the course of a year. And it drove him mad, he said, that it was just lots of insanity and inanity. And he had one of his essays, and it was about dance programs. And one of the things that he was really struck by was that it seems all the dances were about sex in one way or another. It was all sublimated sex or overt sex. It's basically shaking your booty. And one of the questions he asked in there that I found really profound and that has always stuck with me was, where are the dances for community? Where are the dances for the harvest? Where are the dances for the spring? Where are the dances for the new moon? It's all about one thing, sex and romantic love. And I contrast that with something that my friend Jeanette Armstrong, the Okanagan Indian writer and activist, said to me decades ago. She was talking about a dance that their community does every spring, which is about bundling reeds. And in this dance, the people in the community continually make the motion of bundling reeds. And she said, with this dance, we are reminding ourselves of how important the reeds are, and we are reminding ourselves of the gratitude we need to feel toward the reeds. And at the same time that we're bundling the reeds, what we're also doing is bundling our community and bundling ourselves back together. And I just contrast that fairly constantly with, once again, what most dances are about in modern society and how much we're costing ourselves. But it's not just dance that is the problem here. The problem is that everything gets condensed to the intensely personal. And so we have pop music. It's just extraordinary that we have almost all songs are about sex or love. And I'm on top of the world looking down on creation. The only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. And everything is wrapped up into one person, as opposed to, for the most part, we don't have songs about revolution. We don't have songs about our love for the land. I was on there was a local Talawa man was giving a tour of some of the important sites, the Talawa Indian sites locally, and including the center of the universe out at Yantaket. And at one point he told us about a song that his nephew, I believe, or some relative of his had come up with and was singing. And he sang, it was a beautiful song, and then in his own language. And then we asked him what this song was, and he said it was a song about welcoming the salmon. And how many of us in this culture do we have salmon welcoming songs? Do we have songs for our love of the land? And do we have songs about trees and our love for them? And we have to remember songs, and now I'm going to go a different direction for a moment, that I remember several years ago, I was driving in a car somewhere, and I was listening to, unfortunately, I didn't have anything better to do, so I was listening to PBS, which is just kind of drives me crazy. And the a person on PBS was interviewing a musician, a rock musician, and he was saying how great it is to go to some country where the young people have not been exposed to rock and roll before, and then you start playing music and they have a visceral response. And he was saying that there are certain chord progressions that will tap into a people's bodies. And that's absolutely true. And I've heard the same thing from Jeanette Armstrong and from other Indigenous people too, that one of the purposes of music and dancing is really to entrain us, E-N-T-R-A-I-N, is to access very deep and profound parts of our bodies. That there are, it is almost impossible for me to listen to Beethoven's Ninth without bursting into sobs. And there are other pieces that are the same. If I hear people singing even a silly little song, a community of people singing it together, oftentimes, once again, it will move me to tears. There is something. You know, I write books and I write essays, and words have to be translated. We write them and then somebody reads them and they're translated intellectually. But music and dance have a way of, they're deeply embodied and they reach a part of our core unmediated. You know, the words are mediated, and that's not bad. I mean, it's just language, it's fine. But my point is that this is a very, very powerful tool. And through the proper use of music within a culture that we can trust, that can help bring an entire community together. And that's the point of hymns. That's much of the point of singing. And so part of the problem is that given that the songs are not created in our communities and by our communities and for our communities with our community's best interests at heart, it becomes really dangerous when you have 19-year-old hyper-masculine rock stars who are able to open those doors through a chord progression and then sing songs that are written by 19-year-old hyper-masculine, not particularly mature people, and then are vetted through a capitalist system who, with people at recording at the recording companies, who then will be serving capitalist interests consciously or unconsciously. And then it's vetted at every step, so that when it's played on the radio, and I first really noticed this, and this is not news to anybody, but I first noticed there was a problem one summer when I had a job that was pretty boring, and me and the other people would listen to the radio all day while we're working. And we started keeping track because it was just nuts that this was 1979 and Van Halen was big. And in an 8-hour workday, there would be 8 or 9 songs by Van Halen played. And just with the thousands and thousands of musicians that are out there, how could you choose to play one musician 8 times in a day? And it became very clear to me very quickly that this is all just promoting specific sorts of music. And once again, we have to think at every level how it gets vetted. But my real point here is, where are the songs? Is that if you get people opened up through music, we need to be delivering a message that's positive, by which I don't mean necessarily happy, but I mean, where are the songs for the love of the frogs? Where are the songs for the love of the geese? And where are the songs about social change? And of course, there are some. And now, to tie all this together, there's also the question of, I love this line. I'm going to read this line by Noam Chomsky that is, I think, central to all of this, which is, this is Noam Chomsky. Immersion in the deeply personal is not counter to capitalist oppression. Rather, it is a central component of it. Huge capitalist PR efforts are precisely designed to immerse people in the deeply personal, removing them from the arena of decision-making in the social, economic, and political spheres. So I'm not suggesting a conspiracy where there are seven recording company executives and seven dance club owners who are manipulating us all into this dreadful dead end of romantic love solves everything. Instead, it's like my friend George Drafin says, that you don't have to have a conspiracy when everybody thinks the same. And I find this spread over so many areas of our lives that I remember George Drafin also telling me once, this is not just dance and it's not just music, it is, and it's not just romantic love, where we expect that romantic love will solve all of our problems. You have a political system that is falling, that is completely serves the rich and is killing the planet, and somehow I'm still supposed to be on top of the world looking down on creation because I found somebody who likes me and who that I like. I mean, that doesn't solve the larger problems. And it also, I think, creates a terrible model for relationships. I think sometimes about the dreadful song by The Who, where they talk about one and one don't make two, one and one make one. And that's a profoundly disturbing and codependent sort of relationship, that one and one don't make two, one and one actually does make three, because there's me and there's you, and then there's this third thing we've created, this community of us. And I don't disappear in that relationship, and I don't want to disappear in the relationship. I want to create this third thing. And then together, we want to create this fourth thing called social change. But back to the original point, it's not just music, it's not just dance. I remember something that George said to me when he was a teenager. He went up one summer and worked in a canning factory. And he said that one of the rules they had at the canning factory is that everybody had to cut their hair. And there were all these other people were complaining bitterly that they had to cut their hair. And George laughed and said, yeah, they're complaining about cutting their hair, but they're not complaining about moving away from their families and working 14 hours a day to serve a capitalist enterprise. And so I hope that it's starting to become clear what I'm trying to get at with all this, which is that we get immersed in this deeply personal at the same time that the larger system is coming at us from all sides and is destroying communities, destroying natural communities. But hey, so long as I got a good relationship, so long as, you know, they don't make me cut my hair. And we see this with surveillance, that I remember the first time I ever went into a store that had security cameras, I boycotted that store for like 3 years because this was such an invasion of privacy. And I kept thinking, if they don't trust me, why should I trust them? And nowadays, of course, security cameras are everywhere. And we are glad. And in fact, nowadays it's so bad that we put post-it notes over our cameras on our computers so we don't have to worry about them photographing us in our bedrooms. And that's what it's been reduced to. There's this consistent reduction of who we are and what is important to us. And that is promoted by a system that does not want us socially engaged. And then there's one more thing I want to say about Valentine's Day, as long as I'm harshing on everybody's mellow, which is that I was over at my mom's last night and we were just sitting around and then turned on the television and flipping through channels, and we kept seeing ad after ad after ad for diamond rings. And it's extraordinary. My mom commented on how every month or so, there is a reason to spend money. Every month, there is a new capitalist excuse. And Valentine's Day is about, I believe, $19.7 billion is spent for Valentine's Day, of which about $4.5 billion is on jewelry. And then you know, a month ago or a month and a half ago, there was Christmas. And then just before that, there was Thanksgiving, which is a huge gift to the travel industry. And before that is Halloween. There, every reason for social engagement ends up being monetized. And this leads to one last thing I want to say about this particular issue, and particularly about Valentine's Day, is that why are diamond rings associated with love? And why are diamond rings associated with, why are diamonds associated with engagement, with marriage? And the answer is an advertising campaign that they had the diamond monopoly in South Africa in the late 19th century, and they had more diamonds than could be used industrially. And what are they going to do? Well, let's start an advertising campaign to make it so if you love someone, then you're supposed to give them a diamond. And there's plenty of love in the world. We can have that discussion sometime. And so that's a huge market. And they captured it very, very effectively. The reason that every kiss begins with K, as the advertisement says, is because they want you to buy money, or they want you to buy diamond rings that cost a lot of money. So how does it serve capitalism? I mean, that's the problem here, is that everything, every drive we have is converted into means for the capitalists to make more money and for them to, and they take these natural drives, the drive for connection, the drive for affection. I mean, it's just extraordinarily, profoundly intrusive that I have in my mind that every kiss begins with the company K, K Jewelers. That's also simply not true. Anyway, so what I want people to do, what I want people to do is to first be aware of this, as I'm sure many of them already are. And then I would love for the musicians to really begin to push harder for a music of revolution, a music of the land, a music of community. And I would love for dancers to do the same, make dances for community and dances for the hummingbirds, and for us to begin to see. There's one more thing I want to say about this, which is that it goes along with something we've talked about elsewhere, which is that we have been, about 30 years ago was the first time that corporate newspapers called us consumers more often than it called us citizens. And that's really important, because in terms of resistance, if you're a consumer, you can either buy or not buy. If you're a citizen, you can also leaflet, you can also revolt, you can also do all sorts of other things. And that diminution of our sense of self from a citizen down to a consumer came a couple thousand years after another transformation where we were transformed from human animals who need community and habitat into citizens citizens underneath the government. And each of those is a confining of ourselves into a smaller and smaller box. And so one of the things I want for us to do is to first remember that we are not simply consumers who our job at Valentine's Day is to go buy something. You know, I think often of this poster I saw probably 25 years ago, but it was a Radio Shack poster, and it had a little kid sitting with a bunch of stuff from Radio Shack, and it said, "What your child wants for Christmas." And I remember thinking, no, what your child really wants for Christmas is a loving family and time and community and a world not being destroyed. But if he can't get that, he'll settle for some electronic crap from Radio Shack. And it's the same here, that what's really important for Valentine's Day is love and affection. And that love and affection doesn't have to be. Here's another problem that we face, which is that we think that love and affection comes only through joint genitalia with one person. But why is love and affection not part of our larger landscape? Why Why do we put so much pressure onto one person for intimacy? Oh, I was intimate with someone. That means one thing right now, but it doesn't. And why do we not open out those intimacies, by which I don't mean fucking? Why don't we open out those intimacies to include our human community and to include our non-human community as well? There's a whole world waiting for us, and all we have to do is open up to it. And once you do that, you'll find diamonds not so interesting.